All right. The Newsies. The Newsies was a movie. So once again, we have a movie that was turned to a stage musical. It came out in 1992, starring Christian Bale, Bill Pullman, and others. And in 2011, it was made into a Tony-winning musical. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it, just like The Lion King. I went with the Greens a few years ago. It must have been in 2014 during its national tour, 2015 perhaps. And it is very, very good on stage. The music is fantastic. And one of the reasons why I wanted to look into this story is that we are doing it here at our community theater, and several of our young people are involved. So Jackie and Anna and Douglas and Paul is involved. Did I forget anybody? Brian? Are you in? You're in it? Oh. Several of our people are involved in it, so come and see it in July. You'll see what it's all about. But it stars the character of Jack Kelly and his sidekick Davey, who take on two powerful men in New York City. And the year is 1899. They are newsies. So what they do is they get, at the beginning of the day, newspapers to sell on the streets. They usually buy 100 of them at 50 cents or so, and they get rid of as many as they can to try and make ends meet. Many of them are orphans and live in an orphanage or even just on the streets. But newspaper circulation has been kind of dwindling since the war ended, and that war being the Spanish-American War in 1899. And so they're trying to keep their profit margins, Pulitzer in specifically, and by extension, who's not in the play, Hearst, William Randolph Hearst. And so he raises the price of the newspapers that the newsies must buy from 50 cents to 60 cents. And that starts a chain of events where they get angry and they eventually go on strike. And this spreads to all kinds of different workforces across New York City. Shoe shiners, all kinds of child laborers, messenger boys. There was a trolley car strike during that time. By the way, this was a real event. If you can advance the slide one more, we'll go from the musical version to an actual photo of newsies on the street around that time. In reality, the compromise at the end of the story is not quite such a victory. It's 55 cents. It was not brought down to 50, but they did win the right to that the newspaper would have to buy back all of their newspapers at the end of the day. So it's kind of a muted victory in reality rather than the triumphant victory that the stage play portrays. One quote that stands out for me in the story is when Governor Teddy Roosevelt, is that your part? Ah, okay. The mean one. Governor Teddy Roosevelt, who's governor at the time of New York State, makes a cameo appearance at the end of the musical, and he says that every generation at the height of its power must make way for the young. At the height of its power. It's a bold thing. When we think we have all the answers, when we're in our prime, when we are running the world, to step aside and to allow the young a chance to have their say and step forward. We might think we have all the answers, but we might be surprised. We might be mistaken that we are always the wise ones. Have we done this as a church? Have we done this as a church? I think many times we have. I think many times it's been a downfall of churches not to do so. They've been resistant to step aside a little bit and to let the young have their say, to share their ideas, to help make decisions. I think it's a good idea to have youth representatives on our teams. Whenever we have done something vital, something relevant to the community, something significant, something that feels very spirit-oriented, I think most of the time it involves the youth in some way. VBS, feeding the kids lunch, summer lunch program, collecting books in June for the summer lunch program. It's motivated for kids or with kids involved. The weekend backpack lunch program that we've stepped forward and helped with. Even with helping the Jericho House, which a lot of those people are young people addicted to drugs. We've stepped forward because there's something about youth and their involvement. Something about having them as a part of our community that infuses us with energy that cannot be duplicated. We could not run as a church without our young people. They help with our technology, with our music. They step forward as our liturgist. This is good. This is also a biblical thing, a biblical principle, to focus on our young, to invest in them. Jesus invited the kids onto his lap, blessed them in the Gospel of Luke when others tried to push them away. In Deuteronomy, it says that we should instruct our future generations in the ways of God, to write them on the doorpost of our houses. Paul exhorts Timothy to, in a sense, seize the day, like the song goes in the musical, and to not let others dissuade him because of his youth. In 1 Timothy, he says that. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, that youth are a part of our church right now. They are not just the future. They are part right now. I thank God for the Parkland students in Florida who stepped up, who said, enough is enough. Whatever the solution is, let's set aside our political differences and make sure that things like this become less and less. I was in Newtown, Connecticut. On my way home from Massachusetts in February, they have a sense of moving on and wanting to sort of not make a fuss, a big deal about what happened, that terrible incident in 2012. The Parkland students want to stand up for people like that who do not have the ability themselves to do so. The Newsies stood up for people who did not have the ability to do so on their own. The people in those hostels, those youth houses that were mistreated, people like the character of Crutchy. They stood up for their fellow Newsies and for others in different industries around the city who didn't have the courage to do so or could not themselves. I offer the question, do we always stand for the little guy? Do we always stand for the disadvantaged? Do we always stand for those who are oppressed? The Gospel of Luke, 1/7 of every verse and every word in the Gospel of Luke has something to do with economics, something to do with rich and poor. The minor prophets, it's all over the end of the Old Testament and our strong language today from the letter of James. God has a preferential option for the poor. And yes, Jesus, after he had perfume poured on his feet And Judas criticized that, saying, "How much could this have bought for the poor?" And Jesus said, "There will always be poor, but you won't always have me, and you could always help them." We almost always leave that little part out. You can always help them. You can always help them. Are we engaged? I think we are. I think we are engaged. I think we are aware. I think we have built bridges to those in other economic situations, in other lifestyle situations, those who are poor, those who are younger. This is a systematic wide issue. This is a global issue, not just nationwide. Walmart is doing a better job, but it used to be that they would pay their employees 30 to 35 hours a week on a relatively low wage, which meant since they're not technically full-time, they did not have to pay benefits for those employees, to which case the taxpayer would have to once they needed some kind of assistance. Costco, others have been able to pay their employees higher wages. They have been a model for a way to make a profit, have a viable business, and be fair to your workers. Oftentimes, the products that are stocked in stores, superstores across the country, and their low prices is good for us, but it doesn't exactly pay a fair wage for those that got it to our shelves. Is it friendly on a worldwide scale? The coffee that we have for sale in our church right now pays a fair wage for those who are involved in bringing it to us. It's only right. Our lifestyles here in North America actually promote oppression in foreign countries. It's sad but true. And it's almost impossible to not participate in this. It's set up like that. The best that we can do is to make small strides in seeing what we can do so that it is a more fair world out there. It's a slow process. It's a hard process. It's a process that's kind of beyond any individual in any one church. It might seem like a drop in the bucket, but it is significant. In the month of June, as I detailed in our newsletter this month, there's a lot of days that promote issues that have to do with children. On June 4th, it was the International Day of Innocent Children, Victims of Aggression. It's a long thing, promoted by the UN. In 2 days, it's the World Day Against Child Labor. It still happens all across the world, where children are forced into labor for very little, if any, wages. Those clothes that we wear and buy. It's sad. It's true. And June 20th is World Refugee Day. Many of us have seen the images of children at our southern border who are being separated and detained, separated from family. June 26th is a day against trafficking of human beings. Many young people are forced into sex trafficking. Sad, but true. The things that used to go on a century ago have been in the underground. The oppressors will always try to make the most that they can, and it has a human cost. As a human cost, it is right to stand up against these issues of slavery, these issues of justice, these issues of fairness. We live in a community that is so much more global than we grew up in. Our young people will grow up in a different world, a world that is interconnected in faith, in culture, in trade. There's no getting around that. Let us seize the day now. Churches tend to be slow in moving, in standing up, in taking a courageous stand. No, let us stand up for what is right. Let us be brave. There'll be some hardships, there'll be some disagreements as to how to do it, as to maybe if this is even the gospel. But it is there. It is there in our scriptures. Are we willing to risk even friendships, relationships enough to stand up for justice? Are we willing to risk our economic situations to give maybe just a little bit more? Don't be slow. Don't be slow. Don't close your eyes to the things that are all around us on the underground. We cannot do so. Even if we ourselves might seem insignificant or too small, or our efforts alone can't change the problem. It has to start somewhere. Let us stand. Let us seize the day for justice, for righteousness. Amen.